Hi, folks. Welcome to What in the History. My name is Dan Brady.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And today we are talking about the Silk Road. I am really excited about these episodes. We've already recorded part one and part two. And I have to say, just absolute great information. I had a blast.
This, to me, was such a fascinating episode because it echoed with things we can still find today. Like, not to give up too much, but like, fine China, the tradition of having that in the house right now comes from Silk Road, modern paper. Without Silk Road, there may not be Hugh Hefner without his fancy garb at night. But no, so many people got together, different cultures, different countries, different religions, and meshed and were able to talk about thoughts and ideas. Like, that's the thing. It wasn't just a trade route. It was a route that you traded ideas.
Right.
People thought thoughts. People started learning from each other. It was an amazing advancement for the world.
Even the ideas of modern medicine and astronomy came from the Silk Road. Just so much, even religion spread throughout the Silk Road, much like the bubonic plague did. We owe so much to our modern world to the Silk Road. And I'm glad we got this out of the way. I'm not out of the way, but I'm glad we did this one. I learned a lot, which isn't always the case. And I know you learned a lot as well.
Oh, I learned a whole bunch. Like, Silk Road was so important that Genghis Khan used it. You know what I mean? And not used it in the traditional sense of I'm going to plunder through. He treated it with respect. Well,
he saw the monetary value and the wealth of information to be gained.
I think it was beautiful, just the fact that so many diverse people, not only did they get new goods like spices, this is how long ago and how important it was. Spices were such an important commodity that it changed the way shipping containers were done.
Well, not just that, it was also like having spices was like a symbol of wealth too.
Yeah. A status symbol, you know, if I could season my food with this from a foreign land, it's not like you can go to Shop and Save back then and get cumin or dill or what have you.
Well, Johnny, are you ready to get into it?
Dan, I got my Speedos on and I'm ready for a dive.
All right, folks. Well, why don't you take a dive into history this week as we cover this. Although the name wasn't given to the trade route until after its 18th century demise, just the word Silk Road brings to mind a daring adventure through unknown lands, encountering people from exotic cultures and far-off locales. The Silk Road, which began being traveled as early as the 2nd century BCE, would become instrumental in the trade of not only silk, but other textiles, precious gems, porcelains, and spice along an east-west route through most of the continent of Asia. Offshoots of the Silk Road would also take travelers through the Indian subcontinent, the Arabian Peninsula, and into Africa. The motives of Silk Road travelers were not always trade. Some took the journey to spread religion and culture, some to wage war, and some just for the adventure. So, Johnny, are you excited?
I'm very excited for today's topic, Dan.
I will be honest. I did not know much about this before we started. And let me tell you, I learned a lot. Like, I am excited. So I'm going to break this down to probably two parts. Just so you folks know, I have a script planned out, but it's just like how long with the interaction with Johnny is going to take based on how many parts are. Because sometimes the conversation is great and it's ongoing and it just kind of extends what I plan to say.
He's saying I'm a problem, folks.
That is not what I'm saying. For those, I know nobody can see Johnny, but he looks like he's about to go to the ring for a boxing match of his life right now. He's got his hood up. It's down low. I can't see his eyes. He's just getting in his zone right now.
I am completely nude from the waist down.
Perfect.
But on the thermal hoodie up top, nothing down bottom.
Perfect. That's what I pay you for, Johnny.
I'm making the big bucks out here, apparently, folks.
Yeah, his pay is friendship.
We need to renegotiate this deal, this contract.
It'll keep you rich forever.
Mm.
So in part one, we're going to discuss the beginning, like how the Silk Road came about. And then we are going to talk about the cities and the area that the route went through from East Asia all the way to the Horn of Africa.
Now, where is the Horn of Africa?
It's where it is now, by Madagascar down the coast of of Africa.
The east coast of Africa?
Yeah.
Okay, so from Egypt down?
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little context, you know.
I mean, we're going to get into that. I just said that. And then we're going to talk about the inventions that kind of travel, like paper and gunpowder. Like, you got to think, if this trail didn't connect all these places, you know, modern life would be a little bit different.
Absolutely, man. It opened up trade between places that wouldn't have had it beforehand. And maybe this is me speaking out of line, but it allowed other cultures to intertwine with each other, foreign people to meet that necessarily wouldn't meet outside of a conflict. It was very fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Good times, man. So are you ready?
I am ready and excited, Dan. I'm salivating at the mouth.
Oh, perfect. All right. So the Silk Road begins in China. And its origins long predate the name of the route. In 2nd century BCE, dynastic rulers began to wonder what lay beyond their vast lands.
I just want to make a political statement up top that Dan be more progressive than me and say shit like BCE and CE. My Lord Jesus Christ, I'm going to go with BC and AD, Anno Domini.
Hey man, I'm just reading what's in front of me.
Before Common Era. No, that shit was before Christ.
Wow, hot takes right at the top of
I'm part coming one. In hot tonight, Dan. I'm so disappointed you didn't ask me how I was doing yet.
How are you doing, Johnny?
Dan, I'm doing pretty good. I've been thinking about it today. I've never threatened to rape a woman, and I haven't threatened to rape a man in many years, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Did you threaten to rape somebody today?
No, not at all. That's why he didn't hear a word I said, folks. So I'm feeling pretty good.
The world in this time was a very different place. Eastern Asia itself was vastly diverse.
Fuck the structure. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay, man. I'm trying to get through this episode.
Oh, try as you might, man. I'm like the snowbank that can't be plowed. Let's keep moving.
ruled by small civilizations and tribal leaders, isolated in their customs and beliefs. Further to the west, empires like Persia and Assyria fought with Greek and Roman factions to rule the Mediterranean.
Okay, so, off topic again, Dan. I got confirmation from this from Trip.
Yeah. And
I'm sure you may be able to do the same. You just mentioned these countries that were isolated.
Yeah.
From what I understand, there's still, even today, a lot of parts of the Middle East that are not only isolated, but have antiquated beliefs and old-fashioned systems.
Oh, yeah, man.
Like
Afghanistan, for sure.
We've hundreds of years behind
us. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of places like that.
It's just one of those things you don't think's possible.
So the Han Dynasty was taken hold. That's a good question, Johnny. The Han Dynasty was taken hold in China, and its first ruler, the Emperor Gaozu, had risen as a commoner through the ranks as a minor official during the previous Qin dynasty, taking official control as the emperor in 202 BCE. Gaozu set up a capital near what it is today, near the city of Xi'an.
You're a heathen every time you say that. Every time Dan says BCE, an angel falls.
Good. He monitored and regulated the trade of the nearby mines, farms, and mills.
See, you come in thinking you're going to talk about the Silk Road, and now we're just going down rabbit holes.
Damn it.
That's right, folks. Surprise. Jesus is the theme of today's episode.
It was Emperor Wu who would reign from 147 to 81 BCE who sent out the first emissaries along what would later become the Silk Road. And we will talk about one of these travelers in part two.
Dan, I don't know if you heard that noise in the background. If our listeners are quiet enough, they heard an angel getting its wings clipped. What the fuck?
Oh my God. Bring it on, Johnny. You can't throw me off today.
Challenge accepted, motherfucker.
Wu was interested in discovering what lay beyond the borders of China, which had by then grown to include most of modern day China, parts of what is now Vietnam, Korea. Korea again, man, it's just haunting us. And Inner Mongolia. Wu believed, was that you moving your chair or did you just fart?
That was me moving my chair.
Okay. Believe that.
For those of you that don't know, I'm poor, so I have a squeaky chair. we are accepting donations for new chairs at What in the History.
Yeah, I'm sitting in a wooden chair that I had since 2003. Wu believed that opening China to trade would allow him to strengthen his empire by making allies instead of new enemies. So he sends these emissaries out to scout a route, and his idea is just, you know, to start gaining knowledge from other countries and making alliances.
Okay, which is a smart move, I think.
You'll learn, like, a lot of these countries and these cities along the Silk Road economically boomed.
That's another thing, from what I understand, that a lot of these cities that we were talking about that are still outdated don't even know that they're a part of a country.
Yeah, a lot of it, because there isn't, and a lot of these, like, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, a lot of these places don't have, like, a sense of nationalistic pride.
Oh, I know some crazy people who bleed.
Don't Big fucking Mac start. Sauce. Don't fucking start.
Coca-Cola when I slip my wrist, buddy.
The Persians had three centuries earlier established trade routes that are now known as the Royal Road.
My mullet's getting a hard on just thinking about the USA.
Dude, I gotta tell you, last week, after I found Chad's buck, the other wounded veteran on the hunt I was on, we were outside just enjoying, like, we had just hung the buck up in the butcher shop. We all cracked a nice, you know, and then three bald eagles were just flying over above us. And there's an American flag flying in the background, clear skies over the beautiful ridges. Man, just
every time three white guys are alone in the woods, a minority loses its rights.
Oh, no. That's not true, Johnny.
That's exactly what it was. How many people that are disenfranchised had to suffer for your fucking bald eagle sights that day?
I don't think there's any racial injustice involved in the repopulation of the American bald eagle, Johnny.
And we call that right there white privilege. Wake yourself up, Dan.
Shut the fuck up. You know who didn't have white privilege? The Persians. They had established a smaller trade route 3 centuries earlier. It was called the Royal Road. It went from modern day Turkish Mediterranean coast, skirting along the northern part of the Arabian Peninsula and into what is now Iran. Merchants traveled this route by foot or by camel in less than 3 months. Parts of the Royal Road would be integrated into the Silk Road, and the construction of the route was said to be sound enough that the Romans would later use it as part of their vast network of travel.
Okay. So they're moving along, they're advancing. Mm-hmm.
Emperors like Wu and Darius of Persia were ahead of their times in creating such trade routes. Because a lot of times these people didn't know what existed outside of their empires. So, you know, they're superstitious and they had religious beliefs to explain everything that happened. So they were just kind of scared to leave, plus enemies and stuff like that.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, it's fearful. It's a big unknown world out there, and most of the time, it's full of fucking danger.
So when we talked about this first emissary, when they came back, they brought horses of incredible breeding stock, spices from the West, and cultural enrichment in return for the jade and silks they had carried out with them. Thus began the economic and cultural exchange that would highlight the mission of the Silk Road for the duration of its existence.
Okay.
So the Han Dynasty ended in China in 220 CE,
you know,
leading to 300 years of political turmoil.
I don't know much about the dynasties in Asia, but they've always fascinated me because a lot of them are very long.
Yeah. This was what started in about 400 years.
Yeah, and I think there was one that was well over 1,000.
So after this, it leads to 300 years of political turmoil, like warring dynasties and stuff like that. But the legacy of the Silk Road had already been set in motion, and traders and merchants continued to make their way to and from China, bringing cultural and goods to the war-torn land.
Now, Dan, before we go on any further, do we know any actual measurements of the quote unquote Silk Road? How long was it?
Okay. Yep. We're going to talk about that. Okay. To the west was the Roman Empire was in its heyday, gaining territory and sending men to all corners of the world on both missions of peace and war. Trade, despite all the power plays going on in Europe and Asia, would continue unimpeded along the Silk Road. This system encourage good cooperation between many peoples to the benefit of all. China began to see an influx of wealth, but also the introduction of religions such as Buddhism, while the provided textiles, the newly invented paper, and precious stones to the outside world.
Okay, look here, history man. Speak English. What the fuck is a textile?
Like, clothing and stuff like that.
Say that then, Dan.
Jesus Christ. Well, I thought the Beaver County education system was a little bit better.
Well, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but I thought my best friend would know that.
You all, that's fair. I just
It's not like, hey, where's the men's department in Walmart? I need to pick up some textiles.
That entire area used to not only be steel mills, but textile mills. Okay. Learn your local history.
Fuck this place. Fuck everything about Beaver County. If you're listening to this from Beaver County, thank you for listening, but the fucking county sucks ass.
So the trade began to capitalize on these items. Like having Chinese silk was to be seen as a status symbol.
Now Chinese silk was some of the finest silk in the land, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, traders in Central Asia began to see increased wealth as merchants, travelers, and others began to take interest in livestock, seeking stronger, sturdier animals to aid them in their endeavors. Offshoots of the main route into the Indian subcontinent saw their spices become a major commodity along the Silk Road, bolstering the economy of an area that had once been culturally and geographically isolated.
So they were talking camels, pack mules, shit like that.
Right. Oh, yeah. And we are going to talk about this a little bit later in part two. But the Silk Road was also used during the Crusades, which is a future dive coming up in March for those who sought to conquer the Middle East in the name of religion.
I just imagine the Silk Road being like a just a long ass bazaar.
Basically, just like
whatever,
yes.
Whatever could be sold was.
100%. A lot of these cities were set up as like trading posts and stuff, and that's what it was, really. It was basically a 5,000 mile long Walmart.
Speaking of trading posts, Dan, check out our Teespring store and trade some cash for some merch in there, guys.
Yes, I need money. no gun, GoFundMe's hair. Wow, I said that really southern.
Check out our Patreon for bonus bullshit content.
We don't have one of those.
Our off-air conversations are just as bad as the on-air ones.
So those coming back from the Crusades brought knowledge and exotic goods back to Western Europe. They contributed to the cultural exchange from the very traditions they sought to eradicate. Riches and the bold-spirited travelers and merchants drove the trade along the Silk Road for nearly 15 centuries.
Oh, that's a long goddamn time.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine they had some crazy upgrades from the first, you know, first pop-up shop.
Oh, yeah.
I'll call it to where it was near in the end. It was probably like an abandoned mall.
Right. So the sheer size of the Asian continent posed a considerable risk for travelers and merchants along the Silk Road, which stretched over 5,000 miles from the Mediterranean and Black Seas to the center of northern China.
Additional. Dan, when we go down this part of Silk Road, don't make eye contact. There'll be a lady on your right trying to sell you sea salt lotions, and there'll be a guy on your left selling cell phone cases. Don't ask what they are. Don't ask what they are. Just keep moving.
Don't lock eyes. Keep going. Keep going. Even if they say, hey, you.
Don't buy the sea salt lotion. The Dead Sea is just 10 miles this way. Fuck it.
Additional offshoots stretch to the China Sea and down to the Indian subcontinent and from the Mediterranean down into the Horn of Africa. The diverse geography and topography of such a vast landmass meant that merchants and travelers who made their way along the trade route would have to face mountains, grasslands, large stretches of desert, and weather extremes from blazing hot to frigidly cold, all in the course of one continent.
It's like Pennsylvania.
Trading posts provided respite and the opportunity for goods and services to be bought and sold. Moving east to west, we're going to take a look at some of these countries and cities along the route.
I'm going to try not to do impressions of everyone because I want to work in the future.
Yeah, so do I. So we'll start with China. Power changed hands in China several times during the popularity of the Silk Road, beginning with the Han Dynasty to the Mong.
Wrong. What? Fake news. China.
Through the Mongol Empire, and at the time of the demise of the trade route, the Ming Dynasty ruled the area. The unique geography of China meant that many times the land was divided by who held the power in the north or the south of the country, determined by the flow of the Han and the Hui rivers. The northern part of China is more suited to agriculture and the south to mining and industry.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
What do they mine in China?
Man, I'm not even really sure. I should have probably looked that up.
This guy knows I am an interviewer at my core, and I always have questions. They're like, hey, got any questions? I'm that fucking guy that my hand doesn't know how to go down. Unfortunately, I like to envision this, but I feel like it's an Aladdin fantasy, but I like to envision a guy walking like with his elephants down Silk Road.
Right.
But I imagine a lot of loose-fitting garbs. A lot of desert gear.
Coal, gold, and the most rare and minerals. It doesn't really thermal core and iron ore.
Well, the coal industry's dying. Sorry, China. No, Joe Biden says no fracking, so that's worldwide.
Oh man. Yeah, so the Great Yellow River, known for its extensive flooding, also
sounds kind of racist, Dan.
Hey man, it's the name of the river, all right.
Somebody had to piss pretty bad. I had a Great Yellow River last night. I pulled over in the side of the road and literally stood beside my car and let it go.
Wow, that's ballsy.
Thug life, man. I've been pissing outside since I was a youngster. They ain't gonna stop me now. The world is my toilet.
And this left the north extremely rich in nutrients and prime for farming. The north of China is, of course, also home to the Great Wall, began by the Qin Dynasty. And
what you guys don't know listening to this is when I throw this shit at Dan, he's trying so hard to stay on topic, but you'll see like a twitch in his face that said he got the information. How the fuck is he supposed to process that? And he like swallows it like a frustrated Irishman and just moves on with the story. It's don't like a mini stroke every time I throw something crazy at him.
They're not paying for the Patreon. Don't tell them that. But it wasn't truly completed until the Ming Dynasty in the late 15th century. The northwestern regions of China and southern Mongolia are encompassed by a large portion of the Gobi Desert, which is not a typical sand desert, as one might assume. But
by the way, we're talking about the Mongols right now. I don't know when the fuck it was, Dan, because we talk so much about history, but we had talked about Genghis Khan at some point, and I learned today he was only 5'2".
Yeah, he was a little guy.
Tiny fella.
Tiny fella. The Gobi Desert has a dry, gravelly topography and scrubby fauna and is not suited for agriculture. However, well, yeah, you know, deserts, that's where I think farmlands.
Hey, man, unless you're making a cactus farm.
That's true. The Gobi Desert was home to important trading posts along the Silk Road.
I feel like an idiot. I was just getting ready to ask my veteran friend if he's ever been to the desert.
A few times, Johnny. A
couple times, huh?
So there's important trade routes in the Gobi trading post in the Gobi Desert. The extreme temperature swings of the Gobi Deserts meant that any human inhabitants or travelers would need to be prepared for anything as they made their way through the region. The Gobi Desert eventually gives way to the mountains and grasslands of the eastern portion of Central Asia. As the Silk Road took its route through what is now known as modern-day Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan.
Huh. A lot of Eminem fans over there.
Oh, my God. Bordered by the Altai Mountains to the north and the Tian Shan Mountains to the south, the Silk Road had little choice but to be funneled through into the grasslands and scrublands leading towards the Caspian Sea and the Middle East.
So they go through China and they go through all these other Middle Eastern countries.
This is Central Asia.
Okay. I'm saying the road goes through these countries.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And it was really treacherous too. So a lot of travelers of the road would trade some of their goods to local tribes for easier passage, essentially creating a turnpike or a toll road through these tribal lands. Because of the rugged nature of the terrain, like I said, only skilled travelers could complete the route without the protection and guidance of local guides. So many gladly gave up this travel tax to get through the mountains unscathed.
Okay, so pay a little bit of money, get safer. Okay, I get it. It's right. like a shakedown almost.
Yeah, but these guys would also get the chance to rest in cities and conduct businesses. So it was kind of if you weren't a skilled traveler, it was, you know, it was kind of beneficial to you too.
Okay, that makes sense.
Now, so go ahead. To the southwest, the landscape consists of arid high grasslands and plateaus stretching to the eastern shore of the Caspian Sea. The ancient city of Merv was the largest way station for traders on the Silk Road through this area.
And it said way station?
Yeah.
What were they weighing there? Cargo?
No, way station, like a rest stop.
Oh, okay, okay. I'm thinking of like modern trucking. That's why it threw me off.
It's W-A-Y station. At one time, the city had a population over 1 million people.
Oh, that's quite a bit for, especially back in those times.
And fun fact, this area is a protected UNESCO World Heritage Site, boasting ruins of homes and craftsman shops, as well as stunning mosques and monuments.
Dan, I have no idea what that means, UNESCO.
It's just this worldwide organization that deems areas historical sites.
Oh, okay.
So I mean, this area is preserved.
That's kind of dumb, because I feel like the whole world is a historical site at some point.
Well, yeah, but it's what's more important than, you know, dude, I'm not on the committee.
Okay, good answer, Dan. Good answer. I was getting ready to grill you.
The Indian subcontinent, for those, thank God I avoided that one. For those travelers who wish to extend their trade into the Indian subcontinent, which was rich with exotic spices, textiles, and semi-precious gemstones, the Silk Road extended down through the Hindu Kush Mountains from modern-day Afghanistan.
It seems like a place where I could go to buy a monkey.
Definitely.
I've always wanted like a little macaque monkey or capuchin. One of those little fellas that'll like an organ grinder monkey that'll sit on my shoulder and bullshit with me, smoke cigarettes. I don't think if I have a little monkey sitting on my shoulder and I'm smoking, he's not going to be smoking. Come on. I'm a loving father. It's all about blunts, bitches, and bananas over here.
So this route was already difficult. It was made more complicated by the extreme weather dangers. The side route was worth it to the merchants who became wealthy from the Indian wares. Remember, spice used to be worth its weight and gold. So the
if you've ever been to a white person's house for dinner, you know it still is.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Hey, I come from white people, and most of them can't cook. I'll say it, Mom. You're bland. Mom, you're bland. I'm sorry. Nan, you're even worse. It's even worse.
Oh no, not Nan.
Nan will take a boxed meal and fuck it up. I don't know.
I refuse to believe that about
Nan. She will take a box of Hamburger Helper and say, fuck these instructions, and do her own medley, and it turns out, I don't know how it comes out greasy, Dan. I don't know how, like, it's very simple. Follow these fucking directions, and it comes out greasy, and she decides to add shit, and like, oh, onions and peppers, yeah, but these aren't good. I don't like it.
Well, you know who doesn't care about how your Nan cooks food?
India. That is so hurtful.
India.
My aunt has been a friend to India for many years. She's dated many Indian men. And I hope this isn't a racist term, but fresh off the boat. So she is a good friend to India. They've eaten a lot of her food. They should give a fuck that it tastes like garbage.
India was glad to have trade with nations that had previously been inaccessible to them because of the harsh geographical divide of the Hindu Kush and the Himalayas.
Hindu Kush, shout out.
Gradually, Buddhist and Hindu monks and teachers would begin to travel outside of the subcontinent, contributing to the spread of religions outside of India.
I'm telling you guys this right now. This is going to be a three-parter. I see how this is going. by the way, Dan, fun fact for you, for a couple years as a youngster, and it still may be in my future, I've thought about joining a monastery, like a Buddhist monastery.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah. Just giving up everything and going, man.
Wow. Okay. I don't know how to process that knowledge right now, but.
Is that different from any other thing I throw at you and you have your mini stroke over there?
Well, I mean, like, you're going to give up stand-up to be a monk?
Yeah, man, I thought, I still contemplated from time to time, just giving up everything and going over and being a monk, man.
All right, you'd be the biggest fucking monk ever.
Yeah, I'm getting smaller.
I mean, just height-wise.
Oh, yeah, I'm colossal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm roughly 6 foot. But in Tibet, I'm probably like 6'9".
To the west of the Caspian Sea lay the lands which would serve as the gateway into the endless desert sands of the Middle East. The grasslands and Caucasus Mountain footholds of present-day Azerbaijan.
Don't scroll past the homeland, Dan. The Caucasus Mountains. The homeland of Caucasia.
Okay.
Don't deny your roots.
Goods and travelers would make their way across this region either by boat across the narrow sea or by trekking along its southern shore.
I see every time the word Hebrew gets mentioned, Dan twitches a little bit, so he might not be fully Caucasian. I'm sure there's some German in there.
A little bit, yes.
Nine!
My grandmother's last name on my father's side was Kronauer.
Well, I don't know how to process that information.
Well, how about you start by going and fucking yourself? The Silk Road's transit through this region made many craftsmen and merchants wealthy because their cities sat at the crossroads of goods coming from all directions. The inhabitants of these important trading centers were skilled armorers, weavers, and woodworkers who would take raw materials heading east and west on the Silk Road and turn them into value-added products that would then be traded again for more raw materials.
Okay.
The Middle East of the Silk Road is not so dissimilar from the Middle East today in terms of the lands and the culture of the people who live there. Although the towns and landscapes are ancient, the region changed hands over the course of the Silk Road's prominence, was at times controlled by the Parthians, the Persians, the Byzantine Empire, and the Turkish. Many of the cities were used as trading posts along the Silk Road still stand, including Tabriz and Shiraz, where modern bazaars have replaced the old merchants' way stations.
Have you looked up any images of this?
Yeah, I have.
What does it look like?
It's just really what you would imagine, like old trading posts and stuff to be. Like, essentially, the idea that, like, from Aladdin, you know, just the street merchants and stuff.
Honestly, like that. I hate to admit that, but that's like most of everything I've envisioned so far has just been like scenes from Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
You come with me.
And you will see a world of a different song.
Yeah, that was really wrong for you guys.
It's just that the tone in my head matched that, and I had to say it because I control the microphones.
Both of them?
Yeah, I can mute you if I want, big guy. Did you mute yourself?
You're damn right I did.
Yeah, take a stand, Johnny.
I control my own fate.
I can't even see your fucking face right now. You're getting ready to like square up Eminem in a rap battle by 8 Mile.
I look like a Sith Lord with bad dental insurance.
I don't think they had good dental plan.
Did you see Palpatine? He wasn't missing anything.
That's true.
Hold on, no, fuck that, bro. Darth Vader was a goddamn head hooked up to a machine. They had phenomenal insurance. You're out of your goddamn mind here. Look, you're out of your element, kid. Get back to history.
Doesn't matter. Star Wars sucks anyway. The scrubby flats and mountainous foothills of West Central Asia also give way to more traditional. You know, that's a comment that's probably going to get us canceled.
What's that? That Star Wars fucking sucks?
Yeah.
You know, I Star Wars is okay. I've only seen all the movies once. Well, that's not true. I've seen the original Star Wars all once. I've seen the next three once, and then I saw what was the first one they came out with? Rogue One, where they first introduced Rey.
I think so.
But I haven't seen the rest. Fuck all that. My sister called me and complained for 3 hours about the last Jedi.
Not my thing.
Sci-fi is not your thing?
Star Wars isn't my thing. Sci-fi. I love sci-fi.
I could have fucking laser sword. I would be crazy.
Just Star Wars isn't my bag, man. I just don't see the appeal to it.
All right. I can't give you too much pushback on that.
Well, all the fans just complain about how awful most of it is. And it's like, how can I get behind something that even the diehard fans don't like?
Well, that's the thing. The fans of Star Wars are the worst part.
And The Mandalorian isn't anything but a capitalistic push to get you to buy merchandise and get behind Star Wars again.
I've never seen it. I see a lot about, I guess, that creature that's supposed to be like a baby Yoda or whatever the fuck it is. I have no interest.
Like, I watched the first season and I paused each episode after like 3 minutes and I wrote down what I thought was going to happen. And then I played the whole thing through. And I would say 90% of the time I guessed it.
Well, here's my beef. I got a lot of beef about Star Wars, but the first one is, what's his name? Boba Fett was supposed to be such a badass, but what the fuck did he do?
I did see where they had him in Mandalorian, and he John Wicked a lot of people. But anyway,
but before that was all speculation because he didn't do shit in the first three movies.
Let's get back on this knowledge train. It's heading through the scrubby flats and mountainous foothills of West Central Asia. Also give ways to more traditional sandy high deserts and plateaus in the area of Iran.
Jabba the Hutt was just a toy box killer. Yeah, I will argue with anyone on that. He was just a fucking toy box killer as a fat ass. If the toy box killer was a slug, you get Jabba the Hutt.
Okay. In the city.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I'm not even going to talk about it. But I could see him doing a tape like, Aju, Buju, Waju.
Noochie Woochie, Snotchie Boom.
Just 10 minutes of that. That would scare the shit out of me if I was chained in a room. If you don't know what we're talking about, go Google the toy box. Actually, you know what? Don't.
Yeah, you know what? Don't Google him, Dan. That's horrific. If you don't want to Google him, he was essentially a vicious piece of shit, serial killer, sadist, and sex criminal who would kidnap, I believe it was, prostitutes or working girls, people that are marginalized in society, women. And he had this room set up where he would just rape and torture and eventually kill these women. And his girlfriend or wife, I don't remember which one it was involved. She would go and catch a lot of the girls.
His daughter.
Okay. Part of it was he had this big German shepherd that would have sex with the girls. He would give him a videotape beforehand to explain to him essentially that there's no hope for you and telling you what's going to happen to you. And then he would do it to you. So it was pretty fucking vicious.
All right. Well, we're going to get back on the tracks. Is that okay with you?
I'll give you 30 seconds of on track. And that's all I can promise.
And the city's travelers were welcome to stay in the large plazas, usually built of fortified stone. These traders could exchange goods, freshener horses and camels, and resupply their food and water stocks before continuing on their way. For many travelers, stopping in Persia meant changing over their supply of goods, especially if they were traveling with raw materials or textiles.
Now, my vision, or at least the vision I'm getting in my head now when you're describing, I want to call them inns, but like rest stops, are scenes from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. I mean, these cities basically were built over this traveling, you know.
I could see it just being a bunch of chaos, but everyone knowing what they're doing while an outsider looked like, what the fuck's going on? Like the stock market. Yeah. That's what this kind of reminds me of.
It'd be like traveling to port cities at the height of sea trade. Like just people everywhere could barely move. You know, just people calling stuff out, trying to get rid of their goods.
Yeah, man. Come by the sidewalk, Chuck.
So they would trade these goods here.
How useless would that have been in the desert?
What?
Hey, I got a surplus of sidewalk chalk, guys. Use it on the concrete.
Craftsmen in Persian cities would use cotton and wool from the west to craft their famed carpets and silk from the east to create custom clothing and linens. These goods would then move on to new destinations carried by different merchants. Moving west along the desert, the trek towards the Mediterranean, travelers would eventually reach the ancient cities of Babylon, Baghdad, Palmyra, and Petra, now in modern-day Iraq, Syria, and Jordan, respectively.
Okay.
These places provided respite from the wear and danger of traveling through the stark desert landscape and offered merchants a chance to trade their goods for art, gold, silver, and precious gems. These cities were often centers of learning and religious freedom as well.
So they're like open to just practicing whatever they want. It seems pretty advanced for the times.
Well, remember kind of like kicking back to Cyrus. He allowed religious freedom in his empire, but that was like land-to-land dictates.
So he was one of those ones that just, hey, as long as you guys are paying, I don't give a fuck what you do.
Yeah, essentially.
Which is how America is supposed to be, the United States is supposed to be, but everybody's worried about what the fuck everyone else is doing.
So Petra's role in the Silk Road was diminished by its takeover by the Roman Empire in 106. I'll give this one for you. BC, although it remained an important city along the trade route between the Mediterranean Sea and points east, they could not keep the flow of goods up to meet demand under Roman rule. Prior to that, Petra had been a focal point of trade in two of the ancient world's greatest commodities, frankincense and myrrh.
Mm.
Both of these sought-after substances come from the resin of trees, which grow only in the narrow climate bands in the Arabian Peninsula and the Horn of Africa.
Now, aren't these just fragrances?
Yes.
Okay.
Petra's location allowed merchants to readily trade in both items. From here, it was a relatively short journey across the rocky desert lowlands to the Mediterranean and into Europe.
You know, that's kind of shitty that the wise men just gave Jesus traditional grandma gifts. Here's two packs of cologne and a check.
Well, what are they going to give him, a PS5?
He was the fucking king of kings. They could have gave him everything they had. You ungrateful fucks. So wise, but no hindsight, no foresight.
Yeah. Although it would be easy to say the Silk Road ended at the Mediterranean Sea, that's not quite the case. From the port cities of Antioch, Tyre, and Gaza, goods would be moved by ship across the eastern portion of the sea and into Greece, modern-day Italy, then still mostly city-states. To be transported and overland to points in northern and western Europe. For goods not moved via water, they would often depart Petra to be taken along land routes up into Turkey and modern-day Georgia and Ukraine. In Turkey, Silk Road trading began early in the time of Alexander the Great through the areas controlled by the Romans and Byzantines. Great travel plazas grew up in urban centers devoted to trade, and the comfort of travelers. Some travel of these plazas, basically,
that's what we're going with. You were saying fucking textiles earlier, but now we're going to change it
to caravanserias or travel plazas.
Caravanserias sounds sexy, Dan.
Only for you.
We're going to the caravanseria.
Hey, man, if you can't, if you don't know it, then you can't afford it.
All right. We're just going to move to the left with that one.
I got you, fucker. Some of these beautiful structures can still be seen in modern Turkey.
No. You of all people are not allowed to say to me, if you can't pronounce it, you can't afford it, motherfucker.
Oh, we're going back to this?
Yeah, that's right.
The old Silk Road routes would become the country's major paved highways. So it's in modern day Turkey, they're using these Silk Roads, or the old trade route is now a major highway.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Despite hosting some of the most hospitable stops along the Silk Road, much of Turkey's merchant trade would be turned over to sea travel when the Ottoman Empire took over in the early 14th century.
Now, just as a quick update, Dan was a researcher on another podcast I was on. Ottoman Empire started in 1299.
Mm-hmm.
I pay attention, fucker.
Merchants who wished to travel north and west would cross the Caucasus Mountains into the lands that would become Armenia and Georgia, a journey which posed unique dangers due to snow, ice, and treacherous high passes.
You know, I know I'm a bit of a prude and I don't mention things like this, but two things. I think Armenian women are absolutely fucking gorgeous.
Huh.
And furthermore, the traditional genie look, like, I guess Kim Kardashian before her face surgery, like with the nose and I love a gypsy. Oh God. I think gypsies are some of the most beautiful women on earth.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, what are you dating? A white person? You fucking vanilla bean bread motherfucker.
Hey, the person I'm dating is a unique individual and you can fuck right off.
We all are. Thanks to the theme of our show today. Jesus.
No. isn't gypsy a derogatory term now?
If it is, my apologies, ladies. Hit my DMs. Romani people. I know they're disenfranchised. They don't have technically a homeland. They're really discriminated against. And it's like a lot of, you know, the argument of go back to where you came from, but gypsies technically don't have a homeland. They're more of a nomadic people.
Georgia is a unique region.
Hey, listeners, do you see when I give Dan some information in history, how he gets all catty? He's like, no, that's my job, motherfucker. I won't acknowledge your facts. Keep it moving, fucker.
I'm trying to, but there's a big obstacle in my fucking way.
That's it. Seven parts on this episode. Fuck it. Seven, eight parts, guys.
Georgia is a unique region laying to the immediate east of the Black Sea and featuring rugged countryside, large agricultural regions and cities that are carved into bedrock and known as cave cities. This area was a great contrast to the vast deserts and grasslands that covered much of the rest of the Silk Road.
That was a horrible selling point. Hey, sick of these fucking deserts? Come to a cave.
Come to the rocks, motherfucker. It was not only a crossroads for merchants and travelers, but also of culture. And modern Georgia is still a place where East and West meet to create a distinctive culture all its own. From Georgia, goods would find their way to points north and west and in exchange for agricultural wares from the region's vineyards and sheep farms.
Dan, question for you. I don't know much about the country, excuse me, of Georgia. Remember when I was younger, I was confused because I thought they were talking about the state.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about the people of Georgia today?
I know that I saw members of the Georgian army, not the Jordanians, the Georgian army in Afghanistan, and they were huge.
Are they a Middle Eastern people? I don't know what kind of country it is.
Eastern Europe.
Okay. Big, you say? Big people?
Yeah.
Huh. I would have never known. I guess, I don't know. I don't know what the cause for that is.
But it's basically like in the center of Europe. It's like, again, located at the crossroads of Western Asia and Eastern Europe. So it's like a mix.
Is it landlocked?
It's home. No, it lays on the backside of the Black Sea.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure Actually, I am 100% sure they're a part of the Soviet Union.
Oh, really?
Yes, because this is in the region
that the Soviets controlled.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nowadays, population as of 2019, 3.7 million people.
That's not a big population. How big is the country in comparison?
God damn it, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, I don't know. We only get straight facts for you guys here.
Yeah, man.
Back in my day, it was Britannica, and you had to look through a fucking book.
Yeah, we don't got time for that.
I remember I was supposed to be doing a research paper in like third grade on hedgehogs, and I opened the encyclopedia, and they had a very small paragraph.
26,900 square miles.
Do we have a comparison?
It's the 119th country in size.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you?
Yeah, that'll work for everyone else out there who doesn't have a fucking point of reference either. I'm sure that works for all of us.
Yeah, Johnny, I'm just looking out for everybody.
It's bigger than the 120th. It's smaller than the 118th. You guys got that? I meant, and I'm not going to ask you to look this up, but I meant like, you know how some countries will be like, oh, this such and such country, it's about the size of Texas.
Right.
You know, I was looking for something like that, but I don't know how many square feet or square miles or anything any of the other states are, so fuck it.
Very good.
Dan's like, you finally learned the lesson.
Good that didn't travel north to Georgia and Turkey or across the sea to Greece and modern Italy, would travel across the Sinai Peninsula into Egypt and down the Horn of Africa and modern-day Sudan, Ethiopia, and Somalia. Hey, I've been just north of there.
Every time you say the Horn of Africa, I just want to like order some rhino horn.
These areas were among those producing frankincense and myrrh, and also exported handcrafted items made of native African wood, gold, and other riches from the Nile corridor.
See, now I think that is a bit of a scam. Not all of it, but it says things made of native African wood. You know, I see places in the mall selling stuff with wood from Jerusalem and shit like that. To me, that's just a scam.
Yeah, like, oh,
this was made in Taiwan. Come get it. It's Taiwanese wood.
This was part of the cross that that held up Christ.
Yeah, man. I don't think they still have like that wood. It's kind of old.
You travel to like a place like Gettysburg, and they'll sell you replica bullets, and they'll advertise them as being, you know, Civil War era. And it's like, no, that would be in the museum. I know better.
Oh, wow. That's pretty whack. Civil War era. Down in Mexico, they sold me a set of turtles. It was 7 turtles in different sizes carved out of like some type of rock. They had one at every little stand I was at, so I just picked one.
Nice. Yeah. Aside from the Nile Valley, agriculture in the area was very limited at the time of the Silk Road. So merchants trading in wool, grapes, and other hard to get items would have great success if they were willing to travel and trade in the harsh eastern portions of the Sahara Desert and mountainous coastlines of the Horn.
Of the Horn.
Mm-hmm.
Increased vitality.
So many people traveled the Silk Road, but due to its enormous stretch across the continent of Asia, not everybody traveled the entire length. But because it made its way through a diverse set of landscapes, and because its cities and way stations were not always the ideal distance of one day's travel apart, traders and trekkers faced challenges beyond finding a safe place to sleep each night. The Gobi Desert on the eastern portion of the route is dry the majority of the year, and the rest of and the danger of running out of water for oneself and one's camels was a real threat. The desert sands of the Middle East posed a similar threat, although the route was much more populous with more cities along the road. It's also easier to get disoriented in the desert, where miles upon miles of similar landscape can create confusion, the desert heat would also see traveler fall prey to dehydration, sun, and heat stroke. In the grasslands and mountainous regions of the Silk Road, there were dangers from weather extremes and wild animals. Some mountain passes, especially in the Hindu Kush, on routes into the Indian subcontinent, would experience devastating rock slides and avalanches, killing merchant caravans instantly and cutting off the routes for months at a time.
I feel like in the Middle East, they don't have enough dangerous cats.
All right.
That's just my stance. You know, we should, they should have more dangerous cats over there because they got to worry about falling rocks and shit, but they don't know fear until they got to worry about a fucking jaguar in the bushes.
That's a good observation, Johnny. That's
what I'm here for, man. Always bring in the finer points people aren't thinking about.
In the Caucasus Mountains and Anatoly regions of Turkey, travelers need to be wary of bears and wolves in the foothills and forested regions.
It's like, hey, here's a thought no one ever gave a fuck about. You're welcome.
Right.
So they had bears and wolves up there.
Yeah, in the Turkey region. Yep. Okay. So from China to Europe and back again, there's, of course, always a risk of encountering bandits and highwaymen.
Is that the same thing as marauders?
Basically.
Okay.
Many merchants chose to move their goods in large caravans and employ bodyguards, who are often mercenaries with military training. Other merchants would travel with religious figures like monks in the hopes that any bandits they came across would be less likely to attack a party that included holy men.
That's an ancient, are you going to hit a man with glasses?
Yeah.
We got a monk here. Whoa. We got a monk here. This is God's buddy right here. You don't want to rob us and get God.
The rule of the road, no matter who was in the caravan, was that there was safety in numbers. Traveling the Silk Road was not for the faint of heart, nor the unambitious. It took grit and determination. The trip, even part of the way along the route, and the intrepid men and women who took to the Silk Road in search of trade and riches were rewarded with wealth thanks to their efforts.
It was a rough travel. Only a man with the fortitude of someone like Rooster Cogburn could go through this terrain.
That's a good reference.
Thank you, sir.
So, let's see.
You had to have some true grit.
God damn it.
That's right, folks. We keep it coming. Fresh.
All right. So, as we mentioned at top, a lot of modern day came from the Silk Road. So, we're going to talk about some of the stuff that was traveled and this technology flowed amongst to several countries.
Now, I know we're going to keep it clean for the most part and just talk about like the goods and whatnot. But did you come across, were there any slave traders or sex traders on here? Oh, that's all part two.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to talk about that. I got you, Johnny. The first big item that was taken out of China was paper. Okay. There was, at the time, there's papyrus in Egypt and parchment in the Middle East, but paper making would change the world in ways that early writing surfaces could not. While papyrus was made specifically from the papyrus plant, can I say papyrus one more time? Yes, I did. And parchment made from the carefully cured skins of slaughtered livestock, paper could be made from a wider variety of renewable resources.
Yeah, man. Wait till they find out about fucking trees.
invented in China in 105 CE.
That's AD for my Christians out there.
It could be made from wood pulp or leftover textile fibers, and it would be produced relatively quickly. Lightweight, foldable, portable, and versatile, paper would spread across Asia and into Europe over the course of the next few centuries.
And this changed how men would stalk and harass women for the next thousands of years.
Over the next few centuries, It replaced papyrus and parchment as the medium of choice for anyone who needed to write down their daily musings, scientific research, or transcribe or translate earlier works, or to holler at the honeys.
Hey, you need some spices? I got paprika, baby.
Right.
So, oh, I love Johnny. He always smells like myrrh.
And then another... God damn it, Johnny.
See, he was trying, folks. He was trying. Yeah, that one hit him later.
another big invention to travel across the Silk Road was black powder. Created in the 19th century in China. It was a mixture of saltpeter, sulfur, and charcoal that would be used in the crafting of fireworks and weapons that would change the face of the world.
Man, just imagine how powerful you were when you were the first people with guns.
Right.
They were shitty guns and they took forever to load and everything. You had the power to essentially end a person's life without even striking a blow.
Right. And as black powder became popular as a weapon, it spawned first flaming arrows and cannon fodder, but eventually rifles and small arms.
Dan, imagine having a rifle or an arm and shooting someone. People in that time are going to look at you like you're a fucking
wizard.
Like, he's magic.
Do you bet they convince somebody to, like, hey, go stand in front and see what happens?
I'm sure somebody killed somebody being a piece of shit. That's just human nature.
So today, the production of black powder is done all over the world, but we have the Chinese to thank for the discovery of this explosive chemical compound and trading it along the Silk Route.
Black powder is what I got my
cocaine
dealer's name saved under.
The valuable nature of spices was known, especially salt, from which we get the word salary and the phrase worth his salt. Do you want to know why, Johnny?
Worth his weight in salt. Because salt was very important. It was used for preservation and flavor.
We also got the word salary from it. These words and phrases referred to the stipends of salt that would be given to Roman soldiers along with or in lieu of money. But despite its use as a spice, salt is a mineral.
I would not want to accept that job because I am already hypertensive as it is.
true spices from the East, especially China and India, were wonders to behold for the rest of the world. Like, imagine having bland chicken your entire life, and then someone's like, oh, this is curry powder.
I told you who raised me. I've just described this situation.
we're not going to talk bad about Nan again. You shut your dirty whore mouth.
They're not bad people. They just don't know what the fuck spice is. One time, my aunt made me some steakums, and I was making them for myself for work, and one day I forgot them, so she made some, and I seasoned the shit out of my food. You know, I love it tasting good. And she brought me my steakums, and I ate them, and I was like, God damn, these were so bland. She didn't do anything to them. And she called me later that day and asked me how they were. And obviously, as a good son/nephew, I was like, oh, they're delicious. Thank you. You know, always appreciative. And she had the nerve to say, I really seasoned them up good for you, didn't I? What did you use? A pinch of pepper?
Oh, my God. So much like Nan, the ancient world had never seen or tasted such marvels as cinnamon, saffron, cardamom, or pepper. The trade of these spices into the Western and Northern climates became the basis for new cuisines, some of which are still enjoyed today.
I'm going to split the room here.
Yeah.
Cinnamon can go fuck itself.
You can go fuck yourself.
Yeah, man. I hate cinnamon. I don't know what the big deal about, like, I like the spice of cinnamon, like in a gum, like a Big Red, but like, just as far as like, oh, you want a cinnamon roll or a cinnamon? No.
I prefer cinnamon sugar.
Over regular sugar?
No, over like cinnamon itself. Like, I'll eat white rice, but I'll put a lot of cinnamon sugar on it.
You are sounding like someone I don't even know if I should be talking to anymore.
Well, that sucks. I guess we're ending the podcast.
That is sugar on top of starch, Dan. That is the worst possible thing you could eat.
Johnny,
Are you running a marathon the next day? Is that why you're carbo loading?
Oh, Johnny, have you not met me?
Dan's like, let me put some of my bad shit and I'll put some other bad shit on top of it.
I chugged a Red Bull today, then followed it with a coffee. So
to be fair, I drink a lot of energy drinks, but they're always sugar free.
So you know what else became of the spice trade? What else we got from the spice trade?
Okay, before I answer, as far as what?
Well, like, what do you think is something that had to be created because these spices were being traded?
Okay, so some type of currency, I would imagine.
No.
Okay, hold on. Something had to be created because these spices were being traded.
Yes.
Dan, I don't fucking know.
It led to the innovation of storage.
Well, that was the world's worst fucking riddle.
Well, no, hold on, man. This part's fascinating.
Are you getting ready to sell me on the container store?
So, recognizing that some of these delicate spices would lose their flavors and characteristics, new containers were developed to transport the products through the varying climates of the Silk Road. Glass jars, leather pouches began to replace wooden crates to keep the spices safe, fresh, and dry as they made their way from city to city on the back of horses and camels. It's just, to me, it's just like, this is something I never thought that would have to be like invented. It's just one of those things, you know, you just kind of always think that was always there. Like,
well, innovation comes from necessity, you know?
Yeah. I don't know why. I just found this really fascinating. I read this and I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, man, there's no Silk Road. There's no Tupperware. Burp.
Well, get Karen up there and do a Tupperware party. While the spread of spices around the ancient world did lead to the development of fantastic food and wealth for those lucky enough to trade in them, the spice industry led to vast colonization of the Indian subcontinent, and especially after the closure of the Silk Road and the advent of effective shipping lanes.
See, if they would have worried less about their spices and more about defense, they might not have been colonized.
Well, spice became a status symbol. And you know who loves status symbols?
White people.
The British.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Spicy white people.
Spicy white people are just assholes that don't know people can still punch you in the mouth.
Spice became, like I said, a status symbol, showing up at banquets of nobles and royalty across. Oh, dear Susan, I've got this cinnamon on a recent trade. Ho, ho, ho. That was terrible. And on the
that was rough.
And on the tables of lower class families, only for special occasions.
Oh, that makes, you know, I get so sick of special occasions. Like, honestly, I think they're dumb. Most of them. Whether it's holidays or any of that, I think it's stupid. You're going out of the way for some fucking pageantry for no goddamn deal. You know, like, you decorate for what? For who? For who? You see no decorations on my house. You see no special shit like that. We're not doing any of that here.
Right.
What the fuck do I want to impress my neighbors for with a string of lights?
Here's another thing that I read about and where I went, huh. So at the beginning of the trading route's prominence, it became the task of cartographers from both ends of the road to craft increasingly more accurate maps of the road and its lands ran through. One Chinese innovation made both traveling and drawing a road easier, and that's the invention of, what do you think?
Typography.
Magnetic compasses.
Okay. Yeah, that was my next guest.
Guest. This isn't your podcast, Johnny.
Welcome to Inquisitive Minds. My next guest, you've seen him from the North and South Poles. Welcome, magnets.
Oh, man. So the earliest compasses had their origins in the Han Dynasty, which, as you can recall, were also the Eastern founders of the Silk Road.
Yes. The Hans.
In the second century, magnetic lodestones were being used in the Chinese court as
You know what happens when when the Hans reproduced?
What?
They had children. Han songs, if you will. Mm-bop, bop, mm.
Oh yeah,
that's a deep cut for the old millennials out there.
Devices. Damn it, I can't say that word. Like a divining rod, but it's divination devices. I'm divination. Sorry, folks.
Divination device.
Yeah, I can't make my mouth produce.
Coincidentally, it's like we took the wrong roles sometimes, because like Dan does the majority of the talking, and I just sit here like a little fat gnome. But I can pronounce a few things every now and then.
I don't know, man. A lot of it goes to my head injury, but we don't need to talk about that right now.
Oh, boy. See, Dan likes to make you feel bad. You know what? I know what you're capable of, fucker. So you can shove that head injury up your ass.
Yeah, well, the stage is a little different, man.
I've seen Dan soar in this world. I've seen Dan rise above so many things. And I know what he's capable of. Head injury be damned. He's still a beautiful soul. Well, he's just half broken.
Well, it's just, it gets hard reading all this stuff. Like, I just start to get tongue-tied, and you know I get really excited. So sometimes it just, you know, I fall flat. But hopefully everybody's still listening now.
We're like episode 87 in. We know the deal already.
The Chinese would float. Spotify said we put out, like, over, like, 1,900 minutes of podcast this year.
That seems like a lot to me, but I feel like next year we'll be like, holy shit, that was nothing.
Oh, God, I hope so. The Chinese would also float these lodestones, most of which were likely magnetic, in a bowl of water, and using the resulting directional position to determine where to build houses and grow their crops.
So that's the early compass.
Yes.
And I don't, like, from your description, I don't really understand how it works.
Just hold the fuck on. Over, you know, following centuries, the Chinese began to create ways to make the useful device enclosed and portable. And by the 11th century, the use of these magnetic compasses had spread into Middle East and to seafarers who used the invention to steer their ships. The Chinese also developed a dry compass that did not require water, but instead featured a needle attached to a rotating piece of wood. Compasses began to be used by travelers, the military, and sailors, becoming wildly popular with all by the age of exploration.
Off topic, Dan, but we're allowed to be off topic here. I'll connect it in. We're talking about a trade route, goods and services, modern day goods and services. Outside of potentially someone we both know, are you subscribed to anyone's OnlyFans? What's your thoughts on that?
I am subscribed to Carter's.
Outside of that, anyone else?
No.
See, I've thought about some OnlyFans, but then I'm like, I don't know. It's not that important.
You would need to pump out more material, I think, or do sketches based around your podcast.
I'm not talking about me as an OnlyFans. I was talking about me potentially subscribing to OnlyFans.
Oh.
And well, you know, there's about three people in the world that I'd actually subscribe to their OnlyFans. Won't say any names, but if you three ladies are listening, get your shit together. So I'm not saying take your clothes off. I'm saying be your own boss. Become an entrepreneur.
So here is another invention that basically helped grow the world. Cities along the Silk Road grew up around natural resources, the most important of these being water. While water wheels in some form were used as early as 5000 BCE by the Egyptian culture and later by the by later civilizations, it was the people who inhabited modern-day Syria that revolutionized the water wheel. And it's partly because of the Silk Road.
Okay, Dan. Okay, first off, you didn't explain the goddamn compass anymore. You said, just hold the fuck on, and then went on a different topic.
Well, I finished it out. Like, they use these magnetic rocks, and they just basically, you know how you use a compass? That's kind of how.
So, the rocks were in a bowl of water, and they moved?
Basically, they, oh, man. I can't tell you much about that one, like, per se. So they would float these lodestones in the bowl of water, and whichever, like, way the rocks would pull is, you know, here's north, here's south.
Okay, another one. I hope I'm not asking questions that people know the answer to. What the hell is a water wheel?
Water wheel is like basically to use water or the force of water to power something.
Okay. Okay. So like how we get energy and shit?
Mm-hmm.
Like the dams? Okay.
So in Syria, the two types of water wheels were used in these times. The Sakaya, which used animal power to turn a mechanism that would lift water from its source, and the Noria, that was driven solely by the power of flowing water itself. The water wheels would distribute water into aqueducts and irrigation canals to nourish both people and their crops, and the better growth of crops and healthier populations in cities meant that they would be better able to trade along the Silk Road.
So we are talking about the modernization of agriculture.
Yes. Similar devices were fitted with flywheels that would aid in other mechanical functions. Most of the most common being the milling of cotton. Being able to produce higher quality textiles in a more efficient manner put the Syrian cotton producers ahead of their competitors.
You guys out there listening, they're like me, better shirts. They made better shirts.
Well, it allowed them to mass produce more. To trade more. Their water wheel technology quickly spread throughout the ancient world along the Silk Road, and many civilizations looked to find faster methods of irrigation and crop and textile production. One last invention to travel the Silk Road was the fine porcelain that became commonly known as China or Chinaware. This was created by Chinese craftspeople beginning with the Han Dynasty. It all starts with Han. Porcelain and ceramics made in China were unlike anything seen in the West because of the raw materials and the techniques used by Eastern artisans. The fine black, pale green, and white clays of the Chinese highlands meant that potters and ceramic workers were able to fire their creations at higher temperatures, making lighter, stronger, and more durable pottery.
Is that why like people still use the tradition of having fine china?
Yep.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you said this or not, but were some of these items like jade?
No.
Okay.
No, this is porcelain made out of
okay.
clay.
Okay. All porcelain.
The crafters would also paint their porcelains with intricate designs and vignettes in great detail using bright, long-lasting colors.
So they were decorated beautifully, and the people that did this were essentially master craftsmen.
Mm-hmm. So we got through everything I wanted to in part one. What are your thoughts so far, Johnny?
I think it's fascinating. I think it's more important than it gets credit for. It seemed like it opened up a lot of innovation and development for the newer world.
Because not only were items traded on this route, but people and their beliefs and their religious beliefs. So we just kind of have a spread in all directions of knowledge and technology, and it benefited everybody.
Yeah, culture could spread. That's how different people, you gain stories, you gain life lessons from other cultures. It was beautiful, I'm sure. And being so isolated as they were, I'm sure not only was it like good, but it was also very entertaining for them. Like to learn about new people, new fascinating stuff. Like imagine going to the World's Fair in 1904. That's what I imagine it felt like for people that it was their first time on the Silk Road.
Right.
Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I know we're eating off of stones at home, but these motherfuckers got bowls? What?
These guys are using fireworks.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm sure a lot of the new stuff you saw blew your fucking mind. Like spices alone. Hey, man, you ever heard of human?
Yeah, man, it was very valuable. So, you know, I'm looking forward to part two. Part two, we're going to talk about explorers, the Crusades a little bit, Mongolians, And then basically the end of the trade route.
That was probably the first instance and only instance where someone sold someone oregano and they weren't upset about it.
Oh, man. But I'm bumped.
I've been hitting you with the zingers today, folks.
Man, I hope you guys enjoyed part one. I know I did. I'm pretty sure my co-host did as well.
You don't speak for me, goddammit, Dan. I learned a lot. I enjoyed it.
That's why I said pretty sure.
I don't know what this guy's talking about. But no, in all seriousness, though, this was definitely a fascinating episode.
Yeah, man, for sure. Like I said, I enjoyed researching this a lot.
Just as a thought exercise, it's fascinating to think about everything in the world, essentially, that spawned from that trade route. I mean, paper. Paper is fucking huge.
Yeah.
And I know there was other forms, but this was like a more advanced. Like, think about it. You all got razors. This is like the iPhone of paper. Everybody's like, yo, check out this dope papyrus. And people are like, yeah, that's cool. You seen this? I can fold this shit.
But all right, folks, I'm Dan Brady.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And I hope you guys have a good night, day, or whenever the hell you're listening to this episode. I hope the rest of your week is fantastic.
Peace and love.
It was a moonless night. I was 18 years old. My life was going nowhere. It was midnight at the railroad tracks. Miles away from anywhere, I said my dark prayer. You didn't look quite how I figured. Green suit and black hair, smile on his face, ribbons on his chest. Seemed to walk on air. He promised to get me out of this town. I'd be handsome, wealthy, and brave. I'd travel the world, be powerful, but a slave until my grave. Now it's raining in the desert, as it always gotta rain on me. I'm just another of the devil's dogs. Would they ever want with me? He grinned, I signed my name. Diabolical Pack Seal. The cadence of an evil choir. Sand shifted, I fell into the pit and marched with the other damned until I was one of them. But for every deal with Satan, we all face judgment day. Sends to a floating prison, but a comfort I win. Now it's raining on the ocean. Why's it always gotta rain on me? I'm tired of being the devil's dog. Lost out on the sea. Spend half my time.